Thanks for tuning in again to Organic Matters. I haven't done I call it a factoid part of the show for a while. It's the Organic Matters factoids. These are things I go and find. I make sure that what it is a fact. It's usually little 2 and 3 minute update facts on all the things I talk about, whether it's climate or in this case, the first one is a new invasive pest that I hadn't even heard about. And I guess it's really spreading across the nation pretty fast. But then we'll go into some other stuff. It's just little things that kind of, you know, at least I'm always interested in. And I hope some of you are. I certainly get emails that indicate that. The spotted lanternfly is an invasive pest originally from Asia that arrived here in the United States just like 7 years ago. Now it's pretty recent. It's a good-looking, little handsome and colorful insect, but unfortunately, it has learned to feed on the saps of more than 70 of our native plant species, and it leaves them susceptible and wide open to disease and destruction from other natural antagonists that are probably already around. It destroys fruit crops, trees, and plants by hopping from plant to plant, crop to crop, and tree to tree, and just makes enough damage on those plants to open them wide open for other problems. Several states have established quarantines already aimed at preventing the spread of this bug. Pennsylvania, which is where they first detected it in the United States back about 7 years ago, issued an order of quarantine and treatment that imposes fines and even potential criminal penalties on anyone who intentionally moves a spotted lanternfly at any stage of its life from one sort of a location to another. These insects hop and fly, but only for short distances. However, they can hitch a ride on vehicles, clothing, and other objects that people bring with them, especially if they're going out in the open. They have now spread to at least 9 states, primarily in the Northeast so far. Lanternflies arrived in New York City last year and quickly made it to the most wanted list for environmentalists. The city's park department says, if you see a spotted lanternfly, squish it, dispose of it, and report it to us immediately. New York's Department of Agriculture has asked people in the Finger Lakes region up in New York, home of numerous vineyards, to collect specimens and provide specifics on exactly where they were found. Now, so you won't think I'm being an alarmist here. Lanternflies are totally harmless to us and to our pets, but they do threaten everything, most importantly, in a lot of areas, oak trees, walnut trees, poplar trees, really hard on grapes. Out west, they would really be bad on almonds and almost all fruit orchards. As the species continue to spread across the country, both federal and state officials have a unified message. If you come across a spotted lanternfly, kill it. I'm going to put a picture in my website, organicmatters.info, along with this article. So you may not be able to see it if you're getting me on one of my podcasts. But if you want to go to organicmatters, all lowercase, organicmatters.info, it's easier if you put triple W in front, but you don't have to. Then there'll be a photo there so you'll be able to identify this insect if you come across it. Here, let's switch a minute for what I call a really good factoid, especially for those of us that are gardeners or even the agriculture business. Ammonia is the second most produced chemical in the world. More than half of it is used in agriculture to produce different kinds of fertilizer, to produce cotton defoliants, to make cotton easier to pick, and to make antifungal agents for fruits globally. Ammonia represents more than a $50 billion a year market. We've all been involved in it if we've been anything in agriculture, probably more than I want to be. Current methods to make ammonia require enormous amounts of heat generated by burning fossil fuels to break apart nitrogen molecules so they can bind to nitrogen to form the compound. Ammonia production accounts for about 2% of the worldwide fossil energy use and generates more than 400 million tons of CO2 annually. That's not a little bit. Now for the good news. Engineers at the University of Illinois Chicago have created a solar-powered electrochemical reaction that uses wastewater that wouldn't be used otherwise to make ammonia and does it with a solar-to-fuel efficiency now, listen, that's 10 times better than any previous comparable technologies that we've had so far. This process uses nitrate, which is one of the most common groundwater contaminants, which is what it is, to supply nitrogen and uses sunlight to power the reactor. The system produces nearly 100% ammonia with almost no hydrogen side reactions whatsoever. No fossil fuels are needed, and no carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases are produced. It's clean, folks. The new method makes use of a cobalt catalyst that selectively converts nitrate molecules into ammonia with a very high efficiency rating. Not only is the reaction itself carbon neutral, which is good for the environment, but if it is scaled up for industrial use, it will consume wastewater, thereby actually being good for the environment in another way. The new process is the subject of a patent filing, and the researchers are already collaborating with municipal corporations, wastewater treatment centers, and others in the industry to further develop the system and hope to eventually replace the much more polluting and, I want to use the word, dangerous way they're currently making ammonia for all of us to use. Now let's talk about a little pollution that I don't know that I've ever brought up, but I know about it. I've been kind of in the face of it. Most of us have. Light pollution is excessive or obtrusive artificial light. It's a consequence, generally, of our industrialized civilization. Too much artificial light can cause a host of problems, including disrupting ecosystems, causing adverse health effects, and, of course, wasting energy. According to a new study led by researchers at the University of Exeter in the United Kingdom, global light pollution has increased by at least 50% over the last 25 years. But this figure only includes light visible via satellites. That's how we measure it now. Scientists estimate that the true increase is probably significantly higher, maybe as much as over 200% more globally than we thought. Why? That's because there's a hidden impact. Now, I love my LEDs. Every week I tell someone put an LED in their house. LED technology, but it isn't accounted for in the satellite data. LEDs emit much more blue light rays than previous lighting technologies. But satellite sensors actually fail to pick up this blue light. They're just not programmed for it. This leads to a large underestimate of global light pollution as we continue using more and more LEDs, which I'm very glad we are. The researchers examined light pollution accurately from 1992 up to the year 2017. They found persistently increasing light pollution in places like Asia, South America, Oceania, and Africa. In Europe, detected light increased until around 2010, after which it seemed to level off. In North America, artificial light appears to be on the decline. However, the researchers point out that the satellites have that inability to detect the blue light from LEDs, and means that the light pollution has likely actually increased in all of these locations. It's just that the satellite can't see them. I mean, they can't. They're going to have to adjust for that. We're learning that light pollution has widespread impacts on both animals and plants. For example, light pollution can confuse the migratory patterns of animals and change whole predator-prey relationships. It's also been shown to cause trees to bud earlier and earlier in the spring as light pollution increases. While there's no off switch for the planet, we're not going to be able to do that, folks, there are always ways that we could reduce the amount of light drastically with a little impact on our own lives. Let me bring up something that I think you should be aware of, I hope. I happened to live in Fort Davis, Texas for a while, a couple of years back, and they are part of a group called the International Dark Sky Association, the IDA. Of course, if you've been out there, you'll realize that my home as the crow flies was about 9 miles from McDonald Observatory. And all on those mountains around there, people that are really interested in the sky, some of them have giant, beautiful home telescopes of their own in the whole global houses and everything. It's really a true dark sky place. Well, I did my part more where I was because of the animals and the wildlife around me. We now know that artificial light disrupts the world's ecosystems. For instance, predators use light to hunt, and prey species use dark to cover. Near cities, cloudy skies are now hundreds or even thousands of times brighter than they were at the turn of the century, for instance. We're only beginning to learn what a drastic effect that has had on our entire nocturnal ecology. If you followed me over the years, you know that one of the things I actually almost did for a living, was tag baby sea turtles. Well, sea turtles live in the ocean, but they hatch at night on the beach. Hatchlings find the sea by detecting the bright horizon that's over the ocean. Artificial lights draw them away from the ocean. In Florida alone, and incidentally, on South Padre Island in Texas, millions of hatchlings die every year because they go the wrong direction and they dehydrate before they make it to the water. And unfortunately, my other passion in life are birds. Birds that migrate or hunt at night navigate by moonlight and by starlight. Artificial light causes them to wander off course and toward the dangerous nighttime landscapes of cities. Every year, not hundreds, but millions of birds die colliding with needlessly illuminated buildings and towers at night. Migratory birds depend on cues from properly timed seasonal schedules. Artificial lights cause them to migrate too early or too late and miss ideal climate conditions for their nesting, foraging, and most of their other behaviors. It just totally disrupts them. We're actually just learning just how much it actually does disrupt them, even more than we had anticipated. Another thing I always let everybody kind of remember, and sometimes I'm amazed that the connection's not there. In ecosystems, everything is connected. A lot of insects are drawn to light. We all know that. But artificial lights can create a really fatal attraction. Declining insect populations, which have gone down in some parts of the world by 50 and 60%, negatively impact all species that rely on those insects for food and on us for pollination. Some predators exploit this attraction to their advantage, but that ends up affecting the food webs in unanticipated ways. And in the long term, I'm not sure we know just how it'll affect us down that food chain, or maybe we should say up the food chain, but it's definitely having an effect on the ecology all around us. So don't want to beat the light to death. I love my light, but think about it. Turn things off when you don't need them. You don't need a light at night in your house. People that run the big buildings, why do they leave? I've seen every floor on in some of these high rises. It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, my 2 cents on factoids for the week. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.